last man against a horde of Indian warriors. It's been told and retold in books and films, but it has never been brought to such vivid life as in the annual spectacle staged near the battlefield in Hardin, Montana. In 1876, Custer, a flamboyant hero of the American Civil War, was already a celebrity.
People like myths. George Armstrong Custer was larger than life at the time. That adds to the mythical quality of the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
The myth also flourished because there were no survivors to tell the tale.
In fact, there was witness testimony. That testimony comes from the oral traditions of the Lakota and the Cheyenne who fought here.
Joe Medicine Crow heard stories of the battle firsthand. His grandfather, White Man Runcie, was one of Custer's Indian scouts who survived the battle by chance.
My grandfather, say, was such a huge battle, covering a huge area, that no one man is able to see it all.
What the Indians did see paints a disturbing picture. They talk of chaos and panic amongst the troopers, with no gallant last stand. But for years, their accounts were discounted as unreliable.
For some reason, the white man doesn't like to hear Indians tell it the way it was.
Now, science is proving that the Indian stories are closer to the truth than the famous American legend. For thousands of years, Indian tribes roamed the northern plains. But by 1876, they were seen as a threat to the opening of the West. A military campaign was launched to force the Northern Plains Indians onto reservations, but Sioux Chief Sitting Bull refused to give up his traditional way of life.
Sitting Bull sent word to the various Sioux tribes who were already on the reservation, come back. Come to my camp for the last big fight. It will be a good day to die.
After the battle, horrified comrades found 268 bodies and buried them where they lay. Today, they are commemorated on the only battlefield in the world which marks the places where men died.
The Little Bighorn battlefield is unique in one specific way. It has white marble markers that indicate the location men fell in battle. The obvious one that people see is Last Stand Hill, where about 40-odd markers are placed. But as you move across the battlefield, there are a string of them scattered down the line, what we call South Skirmish Line, to Deep Ravine. And then there are just ones that are just scattered randomly, and they may indicate where men had tried to move and escape.
Douglas Scott and Richard Fox have spent years investigating the Little Bighorn battlefield. Beneath the earth, they have found the evidence of how Custer was defeated.
A battlefield site is like a crime scene. On the one hand, the material evidence, the bullets, the cartridges, and the eyewitness accounts of what the combatants saw and what they did in the battle.
The victims cannot speak, but the recovery of a trooper's bones provides the first clues to what really happened on the battlefield.
To the side of marker 128, we found a burial pit containing most of the skeletal elements of an individual about 19 to 21 years old.
The range of injuries on this one trooper reveals the ferocity of the battle.
Massive blunt force trauma to the mandible, to the point these teeth were broken in half. Sharp force trauma to the bottom side of the collarbone.
And there's a cut mark, and we think it's probably made with a knife.
Sharp force trauma to both femurs,
such as would be made with an axe.
A gunshot wound to the left arm near the wrist.
The bullet entered the bone and then did not leave it.
Gunshot wounds to the thorax.
Some of the bullets probably shot into him from a distance. And when the fighting closed in, perhaps they found him still bleeding and finished him off with a coup de grace to the head.
The bones confirmed that the Indians used traditional weapons, but they also had guns. A gunshot wound to the hip would even provide the evidence for identification of another trooper.
You can see the gunshot wound, and there are little pieces of the bullet that were scraped off as the bullet passed through the bone, and then continued on through the bone into the abdomen and through the large intestine. That kind of injury at that time would have been mortal. Even today, you don't mess around with a gut shot.
This is a person who died of a gunshot wound to the hip, and we believe him to be Vincent Charlie. When Trooper Charlie was located after the Battle of Little Bighorn, he was found with the wound to his hips and with a stick jammed down his throat. Knowing that's the way he died, we can reasonably conclude this is Vincent Charlie.
There are no pictures of Vincent Charlie, so leading forensic artist Betty Pat Gatliff is putting a human face on the past.
Well, the purpose in forensics, of course, is for identification. But to law enforcement, finding out who the victim is can be the key to solving the crime. For until they know who the victim is, how do they find the perpetrator?
The killers of Vincent Charlie are not in doubt. But his remains and the bones of other soldiers would show not just how they died, they would also show how they lived. And this evidence with battlefield archaeology would explain how a disciplined fighting unit like the 7th Cavalry could be beaten by a horde of Indian warriors. On May the 17th, 1876, three columns of soldiers marched into Montana to force the Northern Plains Indians onto reservations. It was thought Indian tribes were camped near the Little Bighorn River, so George Armstrong Custer was ordered to take the 7th Cavalry and find them. On the morning of June the 25th, Custer's Crow Indian scouts spotted an encampment far to the west.
Part of war is that you take their guns, you take their ammo, you take their clothing. These become trophies, booty of war, and all armies have done it. And so it was standard practice. But he warned the people, do not take anything from these soldiers when they die in our camp, or great misery will befall our people.
This vision was so powerful that the Indians felt compelled to carve it on Deer Medicine Rock, which towered above the growing Indian village. The Indians also turned Sitting Bull's prophecy into a work of art. The power and potency of this vision electrified the Indians. For the tribes on the plains, there was an umbilical link between the spiritual world and the natural world. The vision wasn't a work of Sitting Bull's imagination, but a prediction of the future.
He was given these dreams, these prophecies that came true time and time and time again. And so when he did this Sundance and they heard of his vision, it truly was a rallying point, because they knew he's had visions before and they've come true, and here's another vision of a great victory. And it rallied the people together.
Wow. Is that heavy duty? 135 years ago, the Battle of Little Bighorn. And that's some of the reality of it. He was a visionary, Sitting Bull, and they believed him, and they rallied around. When he said, I had a vision of a battle, and we won, they all rallied around, and they kicked their butts.
But the inexorable forces of history came back on him.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I guess we got to wrap this up now today. Thank you, Amy, very much for coming in.
Thank you, Jay.
Well, we won't forget about your Relay for Life coming up in Carson City. What's the date again?
July 16th and 17th.
July 16th and 17th. Mm-hmm. And JP Attitude, you started a real thing here this week. You got me thinking.
I'm upset about the rhinos, so the next column's about...
Rhinos?
Republicans in name only. Like Romney, so...
Oh, be sure to check out his column. You like that better?
Yeah, I do.
Check out his column
every
week.
Makes me sound like a real newspaper man.
JP at it. Newspapers are out, though. Blogs are in. I'm trying to tell you, you got to be hip. You got to be with the now, JP. JPattitude.com. So it's going to be about Republicans this next week? Candidates or what?
Rhinos. I don't think they're really Republicans.
What do you mean? Pretending Republicans?
Come on. What's the difference between Romney and Obama?
What?
Name one issue where they disagree. Can you do that off the top of your head? No. Interesting, yeah.
Okay, you got me there. Mm-hmm. Wow.
What did I say last week? That Romney was the white Obama?
You promised you weren't going to use that black and white stuff anymore. Good.
How about gay marriage?
What about it? We talked about it.
No, they feel the same way. They feel the same way, right?
Gay
They do. They're wishy-washy. Whatever's going with the wind.
Isn't it Romney who pushed through the gay marriage in Massachusetts? So he's actually to the left of Obama on that issue.
Oh, well, boy.
Whatever. We'll be looking forward to that next week. Thank you, JP. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
Next week on Broadview, Carol Abel is going to be with me from the Hidden Valley Wild Horse Association and Connie McMullen. You're with Fox News Radio, 1270 KBZZ, Reno Sparks.